Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Sunday, 1st August 2021. We will be continuing from this book, Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way. We are at page 96. We use the above essential Dhamma cultivation and wisdom to cut off the sections in ourselves and help others to do the same. So all this, the section of suffering, you need wisdom, you need Dhamma understanding to root them out. So to cut off the section and affliction, we really need to apply the Dhamma and have the wisdom. So after that, only can we help others do the same. In so doing, we realize renunciation and compassion, which is none other than the Bodhi mind. So this one maybe I need to explain a bit. Renunciation, the meaning is very wide. It is not like the first aspect of renunciation that most people consider as renunciation. When we talk about renunciation, it's normally about going for to become a monk. We renounce the worldly things. We renounce all of our belonging, our loved ones, everything. Then we renounce the world by going for to become monks. Then we take the monk's precept. Then we devote ourselves for cultivation. But that renunciation is only one particular aspect, which is to go for and to take the cultivation seriously. But in the Buddhist tradition, especially the Mahayana tradition, this word renunciation is very wide in its meaning and scope. Here it means to renounce everything, whatever that can give rise to affliction, can give rise to conflict, misunderstanding, suffering, misery. We have to renounce everything. So like the final summary of the Buddha is stated very clearly in his first number two final summary. The Buddha said, in short, it is due to our self-delusion that condition us to grasp and cling onto these five aggregates of grasping that I call suffering. So whatever that is related to these five aggregates of form and mind, if you cling on to them, it will cause us suffering, misery, affliction. So in order to be free of all suffering, we need to renounce all this delusion that condition us to cling, grasp and hold on to these five aggregates of form and mind. So to renounce them, we first of all need to know what they are. So we have gone through the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind. Then why are they grasping aggregate? Because we believe they are real, they exist, they belong to us. So we attach to the physical body, we suffer because we will fear it going the way of nature. Means one day it will grow old, it will get sick, and it will die. So this is definitely affliction, suffering. Then the next aggregate is feeling. When we attach to good feeling and reject painful or unpleasant feeling, again we suffer. So all our feeling also need to be renounced. We have to renounce the external form, the perception aggregate that brings in from outside. We have to renounce our physical bodily form. Otherwise, if we attach, we cling, we hold, we suffer. Then the third aggregate is perception. Whatever we come to perceive becomes a reality to us when we don't have the understanding and the Dhamma. So perception can bring about external form into our mind. So everything that mind creates through your seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. If you deludedly hold, grasping, cling, suffering will arise. So this is attachment. That's why we need to renounce them. Whatever they arise within our aggregates of mind, maybe a feeling, a perception, or a mental form, we have to understand them for what they are. So ability to renounce them to an understanding or wisdom is very important. Then the next one, which is more difficult to develop the wisdom, to liberate the mind, is Sankara. When we attach to all of our mental thinking, our mental states, our mental emotion, pleasant and unpleasant emotion or feeling, then all of the views, opinion, conditioning, the moment you cling, you attach, you hold, you will be entangled. That's why suffering will arise. So all this need clear understanding. And the only way to understand all this is to develop mindfulness to investigate the Dhamma and to awaken. So mindfulness is awareness, to be mindful of what is going on. Then finally, the last aggregate is consciousness. Whatever that we become conscious of, like our seeing consciousness, our hearing, our smell, our taste, our tactile, and our thought, we need to cognize them for what they are through wisdom, through understanding. Then we will not be gullible, we will not be deluded, we will not grasp to what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So this attachment to consciousness is very powerful when you don't have the wisdom. That's why all of meditation is to train our mind to understand all this so that we will not grasp. So renunciation here means able to renounce everything that is connected to delusion, to ignorance, leading to grasping of the five aggregate of form and mind as real, as the me, as the I, as the mind, as what we are. So these are very powerful delusion. Okay, we go back to the sharing. So this renunciation I have explained. Without renunciation, you cannot free. And to renounce, we need wisdom. So when we have wisdom, our mind automatically develops this ability to renounce. We are no more ignorant, no more delusion. That is automatically developing compassion. We cannot be selfish anymore. We cannot have emotional negativity. We cannot have doubt. We cannot have like unnecessary affliction or suffering, because the wisdom is there to protect us. So when you have wisdom, the evil roots are no more there. You are naturally wholesome. That's why love and compassion will be there. And this is none other than our Bodhi mind. Our Bodhi mind is our true mind without delusion. That's the reason why when you are no longer deluded, you don't cling anymore. You don't attach, because you have wisdom. And that's the reason why we can renounce all the delusion. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, Oh, flower at all. Oh, flower ornament sutra or Huayan Jing. There is this phrase, I think phrase should be phrase, not phase. Phrase. When the Bodhicitta or Bodhima is generated, one ultimately attains Buddhahood. That's why we need to plant that seed, the seed of Bodhi, so that it can arise as the condition for you to be reminded of this cultivation, vows and understanding, life after life. This is a teaching of awakened mind, entering the path of Buddhahood, arousing Bodhi mind. Maybe much or it may be little, but it is an accomplishment. You may not fulfill this path completely, but you have to at least gain a strong foothold. And you are certain to attain Buddhahood in the future. In that sense, one attains the Buddhahood when Bodhicitta is generated. Yeah, this is very true. Someone who give rise to Bodhicitta and also vow to benefit all living beings is a Bodhisattva. Then we come to the stage of Bodhi mind development. This part is very important. There are five stages of Bodhi mind development. It is the Bodhi mind that first aspire to Sammasambuddha. They are making the resolve or aspiration sincerely with faith, and we are willing to persevere to realize it. So the first stage of Bodhi mind development or cultivation is very simple, and everyone who has the condition, sincerity and faith can do it. Oh, is there? The whole paragraph was given. I have to go back. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I skipped one paragraph. Yeah. In that sense, one attained Buddhahood when Bodhicitta is generated. Okay, I was there. Someone who gave rise to Bodhicitta and also vowed to benefit all living beings is the Bodhisattva. Yeah. Then we come to the stage of Bodhi mind development. This is the one I want to share with you all tonight. Yeah, this one is very important. Arousing Bodhi mind establishes one on the path to Buddhahood, but it is still an embryonic, means in its infancy, Buddhahood. According to the Mahapragna Paramita Sutta, the Great Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, complete Buddhahood is realized after you have fulfilled all the five stages of Bodhi mind development. So this is the complete explanation. Five stages of Bodhi mind development. What is the first stage of Bodhi mind development? It is the Bodhi mind that first aspire to become Buddha. They are making their aspiration and resolve sincerely with faith. And you are willing to persevere to realize it. So the first stage of Bodhi mind cultivation is very simple. And everyone who has the condition, sincerity and faith, you should determine to make this aspiration and affirmation to plant the first seed of Bodhi. To walk this way, for you have got nothing to lose. Then you can go on to develop wisdom through your cultivation of the four basic vows. Then when you have developed the wisdom, do you know what will happen? The Bodhi mind that subdues affliction will arise, which means you are able to subdue all affliction, meaning no more suffering, meaning you are really wise. Hence, you are no longer deluded by the phenomenal, by the conditional. That is the stage two of Bodhi mind development. Then stage three is the Bodhi mind that illuminates the Buddha nature as enlightenment. So this stage three is more difficult to realize. So this third stage is Bodhi mind that illuminates our Buddha nature, means when you are able to realize your true mind very, very clearly. So this one, we really need to develop the training. How come become small again? We need to make it bigger again. Sorry. Just I touch it. I supposed to move it in. So the third stage of Bodhi mind development is to illuminate Buddha nature as enlightenment. Means you not only awaken, but you manage to illuminate that nature within, to realize your true nature until it becomes so clear, which means you are able to connect to your gateway. You are able to transform and illuminate that nature within. That's the reason why the third stage will make you a true bodhisattva. The gateway cultivation via trust, you will do later on in the cultivation, unless you have your past cultivation and condition to support you. And this third stage is very powerful. After that, you will never regress. Then after that, you move on to cultivate via the Bodhi mind that renounces samsara to attain Buddhahood. This means you already know samsara is just from a mind, not me, and no reality. That's the reason why you will be able to renounce samsara. You won't be afraid of it anymore. You won't worry about it anymore, even when the thought tells you. This way may take aeons and aeons of cultivation. So how to take it? How to walk this way? It's crazy, right? Then you will know that's just a thought telling you. That's the reason why the deluded one dare not do all this, because they don't understand. But at this fourth stage, this delusion is no more. That's the reason why it can renounce samsara. For samsara is just a phenomenal world of consciousness, condition arising cause of phenomena. You must know how to come. That's the reason why one of my teachers told me, if you know how to come, you will know how to return. You can return to the source. If you don't know how to come, then what happens? All this adds into your delusion, because you don't know who you are and what you are and how you come. Who take you here? The law of karma, which is your best friend, takes all of us here. And every life you come, you also don't know what is going on because of your self-delusion, self-identity. You only complain, have worry, fear, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, etc. to pay back your karma. Then every time blame God, blame the world. Why am I like that? Why am I so unlucky? Why is God so unfair? But in the past, when you do all those things to people earlier on, you don't question yourself the same way. But when karma hits back at you via the karmic law, you reap what you sow. You complain and you cannot understand why you are so miserable. Why is everything not right? You make other people miserable and fearful because you don't have the right thought, or sympathy towards them due to your delusion. You heedlessly continue to do all this karmic evil. And life after life, when you come, you have to pay back all this karmic debt. So the five aggregates, the five stages of Bodhi mind development, they are very beautiful. The last stage, of course, is Bodhi mind of the consummate, which means you have reached the pinnacle of wisdom and compassion to complete Buddhahood. Meaning you had completed the cultivation of the 10 perfection. Master Sun Yan asks, where do we stand in the five stages of Bodhisattva or Bodhi mind development? So this is a very good check. If you are very confident, you should say at least stage one. Stage one is very simple because you have to aspire. So you don't have to worry about all this. So you don't have to worry for you have done nothing wrong and you have got nothing to lose, but everything to gain. Or have you not yet generated the Bodhi mind? Which means first stage also we don't have. Bodhi mind also not generated or not planted as yet, which means you are not sincere because you don't have the faith and the determination to go this way as yet. That's the reason why you must aspire with utmost sincerity, faith and determination to plant the seed of Bodhi. And this aspiration is very important. This is the Dhamma I need to have. This is the right view I need to understand. I'm going all out to plant this seed of Bodhi so as not to miss this window of opportunity, so that every life when this nature comes, whether choose to come or have to come, it will have the understanding. After you have this Bodhi mind planted, the seed of Bodhi will nurture and grow, and it can nourish through wisdom and compassion. This is very true, right? Then the next thing for you to do is every day you need to read through this Bodhisattva vows notes, the yellow card. We are your sincere mind to renew the four great vows and all your other aspiration and affirmation, so as to remember them firmly until you can recite them without having to refer to them anymore. This may take about 3 months. This one I have explained before, okay? Therefore, I ask you all to arouse this attitude of Bodhi mind within yourself. This is very important to start on the Bodhisattva way to realize Buddhahood. The main task is to fulfill the four basic vows, to accomplish wisdom, compassion, and ultimate Buddhahood. How do you generate Buddha mind, Bodhi mind? For one, you can generate Bodhi mind when you bow to your meditation cushion. This is Master Sun Yan's style. The meditation cushion is where he sits. So to him, this is the Bodhi mandala. That's why he pay respect to his meditation cushion before sitting. This is the Bodhi mandala, the site of enlightenment, the lotus flower of wisdom and compassion. It's where you begin to fulfill your vows. So a lot of Mahayana practitioners take on this type of practice because they respect the cushion they see That is the Bhuji Mandala, the way place where they become enlightened. We cannot fulfill wisdom if we lack compassion. But to be compassionate, we must also be, there must also be wisdom and renunciation. So these two go together. If one lacks both compassion and renunciation, then self-centeredness will flourish and suffering perception will increase. Without love, compassion and wisdom, the egoic mind, self-centeredness and suffering will increase. So you must understand and grasp those two principles of love and compassion leading to wisdom. Otherwise, sitting on a cushion is no better than sticking a pole on the cross, on the ground, sticking a post in the ground. Solid, motionless and erect, very straight, stagnant and useless. This is like doing samatha meditation, very still. But they call that samadhi. That's the reason why you do thought-based meditation or samatha meditation without any clarity of mind, without any awareness within. Your mind will not be free and you will get trapped to be free from this state. You have to be spiritually alive, potent and luminous. Alive means free mind. Luminous means clear mind or clarity. Potent means having a lot of wisdom. How do we become spiritually potent and bright? By cultivating stillness, you will experience the dynamic working of compassion, renunciation of Bohemian. With this potency, the mind becomes illuminated, meaning there is an awareness. Silence is stillness. Silent mind or tranquility of mind or stillness of mind is the meditative mind. So from there, every time we sit, please do generate the Bodhi mind. Please arouse the altruistic Bodhi mind. Within this potency, the mind becomes illuminated, or stillness of mind is the meditative mind. Okay. So from now on, every time you sit, please do generate the Bodhi mind. So this is important. Generating the Bodhi mind. Please arouse the altruistic mind. Bodhi mind is just the mind of renunciation and the mind of compassion. So this one we have gone through. The mind of renunciation consists of severing or suffering and dissection. So when you can renounce, you will not be afflicted. That's how you develop wisdom, because the perception and suffering comes from the fine grasping aggregate. When you grasp and cling via self-delusion, suffering will arise. So when you cultivate renunciation, you are cultivating patient endurance and severing suffering or perception. The mind of compassion is delivering all sentient beings. How do you sever all perception and deliver all sentient beings? You have to cultivate and penetrate the limitless approaches to Dhamma that you have learned and will further learn. That's the reason why the third basic vow can help you do that work. You are also cultivating silent illumination. Now use the cultivation to gain entry. Okay, I think we stop here for meditation. This part after this is about silent illumination. That one I have to go through with you slowly. Okay, we stop there. Just mark that. Then we can have our 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. So we will off the light. Then after that, we can have our 45 minutes of silent awareness-based meditation. So just relax body and mind, maintain awareness, then silence everything to observe, to stabilize the awareness. Now he explained to you the cultivation of silent illumination. Since it's more natural for most people to understand cultivation as occurring in stages, he has described silent illumination as occurring in stages. To explain, it is possible to contemplate emptiness and soundlessness at any stage in silent illumination. So that is his advice. It is also possible to experience enlightenment at any stages, at any stage of this silent illumination practice. It is not necessary to progress stage by stage. So now we go into stage one. Stage one is just sitting and being aware of the total bodily sensation. So here I explain in bracket, that is Kaya Nupassana leading to Vedana Nupassana, means the first and second foundation of mindfulness. So you just relax body and mind, like what we did. Then you silent everything to develop the silent illumination. He called it silent illumination, but we call it the silent mind. So that illumination word that he used is to represent that this silence is with awareness within. So to him, the mind that has illumination is aware, not the one that is unaware. The one that is unaware is not the real samadhi. That one is the samadhi which is born of samatha cultivation. When you develop one pointedness of mind or concentration without awareness, the mind becomes different. It actually has no awareness within. There is no illumination. It becomes like very still. Everything is held in one pointedness or in a state of absorption, where the mind becomes like completely without awareness. It becomes very still. Yeah. So that one is samatha. So here, he explained it in his own way. So maybe it's not easy for you to follow, but I will just read through so that hopefully you can follow. So, according to his way of developing it, he called it stage one. Stage one is the initial stage where you just sit and maintain awareness within the kaya itself, means bodily sensation. So bodily is our kaya, sensation is feeling. So bodily sensation can bring about the first two foundation of mindfulness, means kaya nupassana leading to vedana nupassana. The stage is entered by completely relaxing body and mind. See, it's the same. You have to have the ability to relax. And relaxation is very important. Relaxing the body and mind and let things be. So the key criteria is relax and maintain awareness. either through breathing contemplation or directly beginning to sit with total bodily awareness. For people who understand, they will know the importance of these two steps, relax and aware, which are also the first two of the four support for awareness-based meditation that I taught you all. Then the next step is to stabilize it. So the second stage is experiencing the environment as one with oneself. So this one is when the mind is just aware without a center, then you develop the ability to experience the oneness nature. So this one is stage two. Yeah? Stage two is experiencing the environment as one with oneself. You and the environment is one. You are the environment and the environment is you. Meaning you are going through this spacious awareness without a center, means your nature and all nature has become one. Then the third stage of silent illumination is to experience the boundless spaciousness. We cannot experience the mind as infinite if it is swamped with thinking or discursive thinking, meaning with your false thinking or deluded thought, heedless thinking, born of your delusion and your heedless thinking. We also cannot experience the environment as infinite if we constantly discriminate among sense objects. What is discrimination? They are the dualities created by mind. When you have like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction of mind, these are the two aspects of mind state, means the duality. These are your sensual desire and ill will. When your mind is so preoccupied with this reaction of mind and thinking how you can be aware and be one with nature, then you will have this problem. Which means when this mental hindrance of sensual desire and ill will has arisen due to your like and dislike, or what we call discrimination, yeah? Then what happens is, these are your sensual desire and ill will, the first two mental hindrances that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So when your mind is so preoccupied with this reaction of mind and the thinking process, how can you be aware and be one with nature? That's the reason why you cannot be sensitive. You cannot be aware because you are preoccupied with the sense experience and the stirring of your mind that causes you to be lost in thought. That's how you discriminate among sense objects. For there is no equanimity, resulting in narrow point of views. So this is his description. Eh? So what is that? Means you created the thought. You go and focus, perceive, and input the content of consciousness. Hence, from a spacious awareness without a center, you focus into a very narrow thought space. Then you get yourself entangled, we are lost in thought, preoccupied with your thinking, your views and opinion, stirring and reaction of mind. That's how you become heedless. That's the reason why you cannot meditate with your thought. The moment you do that, you are dead. That's the reason why, he said, resulting in a narrow point of view. But when our thoughts totally subside, what will happen? We perceive the mind as infinitely vast. And when all our discriminations stop, we perceive the environment as infinitely vast. That's how the spacious awareness without a center comes to be. And that is your true mind or your true nature. You can realize it. But he didn't describe it so clearly to you in his book. But for those who understand, they will know what he meant. If you can totally relax and maintain your awareness of just sitting, the bodily sensation will disappear. When this happens, a lot of people have this egoic thought. Am I, in the formless rhyme, experiencing the arupa jhana? Or I cannot feel my body anymore. So this is very common among those who develop samatha and thought-based meditation. That manifestation of mind state has got not much meaning because it's just a phenomenon, a conditioned state. If you cannot develop wisdom out of it, then there is no point. So he said, in this state, the environment may also disappear. If this happens, it means you have entered a shallow samadhi. When you are in such state, a lot of cultivators would think that they have done the meditation correctly and they have done it well. But not for those who cultivate silent illumination or awareness-based meditation, because they would still be vividly aware of the environment. Why must you go into the formless rhyme to experience the formless state? That is still a conditioned mind state. Hence, that mind is still not a free mind, and you cannot be aware of what is happening within the moment because you are in a deep state of apana samadhi, or what they call absorption samadhi. That's the reason why I always advise cultivator or Dharma practitioner not to go beyond upachara samadhi. This can also happen at the stage when you feel like you are one with the environment. If the environment disappears, you are again entering a light samadhi state. This mind state is stated in the Surangama Sutta, and it is a deviant samadhi that can trap cultivator. Sometimes you can see light and fantastic manifestation of mind state. This is not our cultivation of silent illumination. In silent illumination, your mind will be clear and aware of everything and is utterly still. It is possible to enter this illumination stage from any of the earlier stage. That's the reason why when your spiritual faculty has become balas or powers, the moment you sit, you will enter stillness. You will experience silence. You are just aware. No more movement. No need to be in the state of concentration. And there is no need for any meditation object to anchor your mind to. It is by itself still and silent because it's no longer deluded. The mental hindrances are no longer there. It can just stay aware and silent because it's no longer gullible. So this awareness-based meditation is very, very different and very beautiful. And most people cannot do it because their spiritual faculty are not stable. When you have stable spiritual faculty, what happens is you will have the faith, sadhana, and that will make your mind very calm and very composed. Then your mind will not have restlessness. You will not have doubt. Then when you have the second spiritual faculty or virya, you cannot be sleepy. But it will drive you to cultivate, to develop this awareness-based meditation. The reason being, the virya is a spiritual zeal that arises due to your understanding of the importance of this teaching and this way of cultivation to develop the wisdom to awaken. So the faith will give rise to virya, which is a spiritual zeal to keep you alert, to keep you constantly with that spiritual zeal or tenacity to cultivate, to maintain awareness, to develop the meditation. Then after that, if you know how to relax and maintain awareness, that is what sati is. Without thought, you will be in the state of awareness, which is your true mind, your silent mind. So that's why you just relax, maintain awareness, that sati will arise. Then when that sati stabilizes, it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is the mind that is collected and unwavering. Means it's not distracted, it's not disturbed, it does not waver at the moment of sense experience. When you experience something, like when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel something, or the thought arise. So any of these six types of consciousness that arise, your mind is not affected because it has samadhi. It is unwavering, collected. And such a mind is very stable. That's why you can enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, with inner awareness naturally, automatically, and stay there. No need to do anything. And through that silence, it can insight into phenomena. It can observe, develop understanding. It can awaken. It can see things as they are. That's how wisdom arises. So spiritual faculties are very important. They allow you to understand spiritual teaching and awaken to the truth. And it also has the power to root out the opposite five, which are the mental hindrance. When you have the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance cannot arise. When you have sati, you are aware there is no thinking. That's why you will not be lost in thought. You will not be preoccupied in your thinking, discriminative reaction to sense object or to that respective mental movement that occur within your mind. So all this, you can develop the understanding when your spiritual faculties are developed. That's why I want you to have that understanding all this while, is because very few people understand this. They thought they cannot meditate because they don't know how to meditate. They need a method and a technique to anchor the mind. It's actually not this way. It is the lack of understanding that lead people to think that way. When you understand, it is because you lack the spiritual faculty that the mental hindrance are there. And when the mental hindrance are there, your mind cannot settle down. Because like the word hindrance, it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, which is actually your true mind before the stirring, before the mundane mind become what it is. So that true mind can only return to its true nature when the mental hindrance are no more there. So what are mental hindrance? Your like and dislike. When you discriminate what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And when you have sleepiness, sloth and torpor, the third mental hindrance, when your mind is tired, lethargic. So these are all the mental hindrance. When you are in that state, you don't have awareness. you cannot maintain awareness and you cannot be in a meditative state. That's why you need to rest, you rest. You need to silent, you silent. Then after that is the fourth mental hindrance. The fourth mental hindrance is restlessness of mind. Your mind becomes restless. It becomes restless mainly because it has problem. It has worry, it has anxiety. It has unresolved issue. That's why it starts to create thinking. Fearful thinking. When you have insecurity, when you have what we call phobia, when you have fear, you have anxiety, your mind becomes restless. So this restlessness of mind is a very major mental hindrance. That's why people cannot settle down, cannot develop the ability to have clear mind, to do what they want to do, to develop the career field, to work, and to maybe look at situation or problem and resolve them. So the lack of that calm mind that has clarity is due to this mind that has problem that cannot settle down. That's why it becomes restless. And the last one is of course doubt. When you are not sure, when you don't have the understanding or wisdom as to what meditation is. So the doubt will arise. Am I doing it correctly? Or am I doing it wrongly? Have I heard the instruction correctly? Then the doubt sometimes create a lot of related mental problem. When you are doubtful of your ability, means you lack confidence. Then when you doubt your own ability to develop the meditation and to understand all this Dhamma thing. So doubt is a very powerful mental hindrance. When you have doubt, you don't have faith. You are not confident. So when you lack faith, lack confidence, you cannot move. That's why they say when you are confident, especially during exam or when you are confident of yourself, when you are maybe trying to excel in something, sports or whatever, they always say when you have confidence, half the battle is won. The other half need you to diligently cultivate and persevere. So faith is a major aspect of success or accomplishment. So spiritual faculty, first spiritual faculty is faith, sadha. So we must have sadha. So when the spiritual faculty is there, the mental hindrance is gone. That's why your mind automatically becomes the meditative mind. Because without mental hindrance, there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness, or what we call inner awareness. So that mind can just relax, maintain awareness and settle down and become the true mind, the silent mind. And you straight away experience that silent within, which is your meditative mind. And Master Sun Yan called it the silent illumination, with his way of describing that mind state that arises. Means you are in the state of silence with illumination. Illumination to him is when you are aware, you can like see clearly. There is illumination, like there is a light to actually show you what is going on. But you don't need that type of light. So that illumination is the awareness by itself is sensitive and it's like has clarity because there is nothing to cloud that nature, and that nature can see itself, can understand what is going on, can observe, can realize, can insight into phenomena, can awaken. So that is the understanding of awareness-based meditation which we have to develop. So I will go back to the sharing. He move on back to the sharing. It can just stay aware because the mind is already trained in sati and it has stabilized its sati. That's the reason why such a mind is very different. As a result of your own cultivation, your mind becomes clear and bright, and there is no clinging to self or non-self. This is true meditation, or he call it silent illumination. That's why, according to him, he say it can just stay aware or mindful, because that mind has already been trained in sati, and it has stabilized. So you have to develop the training until the mind is so stable to understand all this. Otherwise, they are just words which you may not really understand. So please go ahead and develop the cultivation. He then continued and said, I repeat and emphasize that you should not take this stage of silent illumination as a spiritual ladder to be ascend stage by stage. This is very true. Don't be gullible. Don't go and look for it. Like stage one is what? Stage two is what? Stage three is what? Forget about it. If you do that, you will be stuck with thought base. Then the thought will be actively asking, questioning, am I now in stage one? Am I in stage two? Am I in stage three? Am I doing it correctly? So who is saying all this? It's the thought. When thought is active, you are not in a meditative state. You are lost in thought. So all these understanding are very important. That's why he also repeat and emphasize and allow the student or cultivator of his to develop this important understanding. He said, you have to be careful about trying to develop these stages of silent illumination as a spiritual ladder to be ascended stage by stage. It's not about the experience, the conditioned state. It's about how you use it to develop wisdom. Each state is complete and a possible entry point for genuine silent illumination. That's the reason why you have to train yourself in a formal meditation to have the stability of silent mind in pure awareness. Then you bring this state into the daily life to develop daily mindfulness. That is the real cultivation. That is the reason why it says here, please do not anticipate a presumably better stage or better stage than where you are now. I talk about the internal infinite and the external infinite. It's because some of you may have experienced either or both. However, if we experience the internal infinite without the external infinite, there would be samadhi, not silent illumination. Means you lock yourself inside. Means complete seclusion of mind. You become like completely blank without thought, without awareness too. So that one is called samatha, one-pointedness. Concentration or absorption meditation, where you completely allow the mind to go into the no mind state without awareness. Yeah. So that is thought-based meditation. That is continuous absorption or one-pointedness of mind. I read on maybe you can understand better. However, if you experience, oh, this I have gone through. Therefore, you need to know the difference. In samadhi, although the internal can be vast, open and clear, one is oblivious to the environment. One should also experience the environment as vast and open, leaving behind discrimination, yet knowing the outside very clearly. The true awareness is having the awareness to know the outside very clearly. In true silent illumination, the environment exists, but we are not influenced, defiled, or conditioned by it in any way whatsoever. We are no longer swayed by discriminating thought. I emphasize this. People may experience infinite spaciousness in their sitting, but on returning to their daily life, become distracted by the external world. They may cultivate an escapist attitude of wanting to practice in that blissful samadhi, means jhanic state, and remove them from others, means they isolate themselves. We call it the self-seclusion. The mind enters internal seclusion. This is definitely not the Mahayana or Zen teaching. The third level is infinitely vast with regards to the internal mind as well as to the world. Having this correct view, one will engage the world. Having this correct view, one will engage the world without being vexed or obstructed. The rest, if you are interested, you should get hold of the book and read it yourself. Then we move on to C6, the taking of the Bodhisattva vow. This one is very useful. So I will go to you all. Then maybe after that, you can do it at home. We have finished discussing the first page of the notes on the general description of the Bodhisattva way last Tuesday. So you can go back and read them on your own. As this part is for you, for your information only. Now I will lead you all to take the Bodhisattva vow. Taking of the Bodhisattva vows. Okay, now we shall prepare ourselves. Develop the faith, sadha and the virya. Then mindfully, we will do this together. I will first read to you the preparatory part first. As is traditional, you may seek a Buddhist center or a temple or a shrine and take this Bodhisattva vow in the presence of a teacher. Or if you cannot do so, you can take them at home in front of your sacred altar or shrine. Then you must do this. One must make strong aspiration to take this Bodhisattva vow with great faith, determined faith, understanding and sincerity in front of the Buddha or any of these great beings, Maha Bodhisattva, who had gone forth before you. It can be Kuan Yin or Amitabha Buddha or Pusen or Tisang Wang Pusa or Wen Su Pusa, any of these great beings. Tonight, we have all the great beings' nature here, Sakyamuni Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, Maitreya Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Pusen Pusa, Tisang Wang Pusa, and all the other Mahayana Bodhisattvas and Buddhas of the 10 directions. Together in front of them, we shall make this strong resolve and aspiration to take this vow. So if you do that, it will benefit you. It's very wholesome. Then I ask, okay, are you all ready? And then I guided them by telling them, you have to be in the kneeling posture, means like want to pay respect to develop the great resolve. And the making of this special aspiration to walk the Bodhisattva way sincerely and with great determination and understanding. This is just to make the aspiration to go this way, not the taking of the vow as yet. Means you determine strongly, this is what I want, with faith and understanding, after contemplating and developing the understanding, I am now ready. And I sincerely, with the faith and diligently, make the aspiration. So I even add in this one, I say, but you must determine strongly, because later on, I will explain to you how to develop the actual vow after you have made this special aspiration to walk this Bodhisattva way. Without this right view and right understanding, you cannot walk this way successfully. That's the reason why you must make this aspiration for you to have this understanding life after life whenever you come. Now I will teach you how to invoke this aspiration. You all can recite after me, following the notes below. These are all in the yellow card. Making the special aspiration to walk the Bodhisattva way, so we can invoke power of merits. By the power of whatever blessings and wholesomeness that this nature of mind have cultivated from the distant past until now, may arise the causes and conditions for this nature of mind to have the following right Dhamma understanding. Life after life, whenever it chooses to come or have to come in the form of a formal mind. First is to have right view with regards to the law of karma, karma niyama. Then second one is to have right view with regards to the law of dependent origination or dwelling, citta niyama. And finally is to have right view with regards to the four noble truth, dhamma niyama. Then inside the notes, this right view we have already learned. So you have to go back and reflect, contemplate, and develop the second turning wisdom on your own. We have gone through the law of karma many times. How from there the essential Dhamma of the Buddha comes about, and how the Buddha actually developed his teaching to advise you to avoid all evil to good and purify your mind. Then how he advised you to renew your precept, take refuge, etc. All this come from these right views. Then you can develop the meditation to understand how you function as a human being via citta niyama. Then finally, from the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching, all the other essential Dhamma are spin off from there. Then after that, we reaffirm to understand the below second right view clearly. So the second right view under 3.2 is very important. You vow or aspire to understand the two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind clearly. We are the direct seeing to realize that they are all conditioned arising entity, causal phenomena, hence impermanent, leading to suffering, not me, non-self, and empty. This so-called living being or human being, the five aggregates of form and mind, is just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world to develop the cultivation and experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. So we need to use it with wisdom to arise at appropriate right thought, right speech, and right action, so as to be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. So basically, this is Noble Eightfold Path. Then to constantly recite with understanding the following profound Dhamma. So this one, the Buddha actually taught the monk to recite. We as cultivator, practitioner, should also recite them. During the early days, I like to recite this. And when I heard this, my nature opened up. Rupang anicang, rupang anatta, vedana anicang, vedana anatta, sanya anicang, sanya anatta, sankara anicang, sankara anatta, sabbe sankara anicang, sabbe sankara dukkhang, and sabbe, finally, is sabbe dhamma anatta. So once you have all this understood, your cultivation will be very stable. You will progress very fast. Then after that, having developed the above right view, this nature of my vow to always keep the following three sets of pure precept. This is to enhance your cultivation. We are following the advice of all Sammasambuddha to do these three things. So these three sets of pure precepts are very powerful and very important. They are similar to the advice of all Sammasambuddha, except they are more elaborate. To avoid all evil and to understand clearly what constitutes evil, means the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are the roots of all evil. So there is also the note to explain further. Then you all have to go back and expand on it. What is greed? Not only your greediness, which I've explained, all of your craving, covetousness, deceitfulness, desire, lust, etc., including whatever you want to take advantage of. All these are part of the evil roots of greed. Then the second evil root of hatred is not only your anger and hatred. It includes your envy, your jealousy, and everything else, including all of your negative unpleasant mental states like dislike, unhappiness, aversion, etc. They are all part of the evil roots of hatred, of this evil root of hatred. Then delusion is ignorance, self-delusion leading to fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. All of these are the three evil roots of sakkayaditti, or self-delusion. Then after that, the second pure precept is we undertake the training rule to cultivate all virtue and blessing leading to the perfection of them all. So to do good is not enough. We have to cultivate all virtue and blessings leading to the perfection of them all. But this is to satisfy our cultivation of the 10 perfection. You don't do this, you will go only the sainthood way, you cannot go the bodhisattva way. Then under this second pure precept, I also elaborated on it. Do you know the difference between this and the second advice of the Buddha that you normally hear of? This one makes it even clearer. Most people only recite avoid all evil, and sometimes they never include the word all. They just say avoid evil, as written in the gate, wall, and SJBA. The actual advice of the Buddha is all evil is to be avoided. Then what did we add on? To avoid all evil and to understand clearly what constitutes evil. That is more important. If we don't even know what constitutes evil, then how can we train ourselves? How are we going to avoid them? That's the reason why you vow life after life to have this understanding. So that when you come, when you hear this advice again, you can connect straight away. It will manifest through your vows and aspirations. Then you will also know how to cultivate all virtues and blessings leading to perfection of them all. The normal cultivation is just to do good or cultivate wholesomeness whenever there is condition. But this pure precept is to cultivate all virtue and blessing leading to perfection of them all. This understanding is very important because for the Bodhisattva way, we need to go a lot deeper than the normal cultivation. Then the last pure precept is to cultivate wisdom to help liberate and take across all sentient beings. There is also a note to expand on this. These are the aspirations that you make so that life after life when you come, you will have this right understanding and true Dhamma understanding. Then only can you cultivate with the right view and right understanding, because they are all very important right views. That's the reason why I constantly remind you all to make sure that you all get this right and make use of this sasana's great window of opportunity to plant the seed of Bodhi, so that in the future all this understanding can manifest and come back to you. Then also at our recent March 2016 Cameron Highland retreat, there were conditions for all this to arise too, because of Kuan Yin's nature that arise on the 8th day, including all the other appropriate conditions that also go into place. That is the reason why through my nature's understanding, I have already granted all those who were there the pure wish to have this understanding developed. But that pure wish cannot take place or manifest into reality if on your part you don't cultivate the appropriate causes and conditions to connect to all these scrapings nature. So today is taking of the vow is the next stage after the Cameron Highland retreat for you all to have the right condition to walk this Bodhisattva way. If you do all this, it means you have successfully planted the seed of Bodhi and you are set for all of your future coming. Then you will connect and become, and then you will connect, and not long after that, the vows will take you along. That's why all these are very beautiful understanding, because the condition just came during the sasana's window of opportunity. A lot of things just happened. The book came and everything else also came. Initially, I didn't intend to teach you all so fast about the Bodhisattva way and the 5 stages of Bodhi mind development and the way to cultivate, where that is a very difficult and long topic. But because of the book that came in the nick of time, and it has the requisite condition for me to explain to you and summarize for you the understanding, so that in future, when we do all this sharing, you all will understand. So this is very beautiful. Okay, we will stop here. We are already 5:18. We have to open up for meditation.
I really too.
Yes.
You went through the manifestation of the vows and
yes.
Yeah. Something that really struck me at that moment was the manifestation of the vows and in our future lives.
Yes.
Once we practice rightfully, uprightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the right view.
Yes, and right understanding,
Yeah, so that really stood out for me.
Means you have that tie of affinity.
Yeah, because all along in the practice,
yeah,
it has always been like, wanting to get wanting to
correct. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is very common to a lot of people because they don't know that itself is actually a very subtle mental hindrance there. In
right.
the sense that that egoic mind is there because we think we exist, we think we are a cultivator, we think we are striving hard to realize enlightenment. So that egoic mind is actually part of Sakkayaditi. That's why the self-enlightenment is there. You just want to finish it off and realize it quickly. But the true Dhamma understanding is He know you, He know me. So when we believe we exist, that hindrance is actually very, very difficult to break, that egoic mind. So what we need is to relax, maintain awareness and silence until we can realize that that nature inside is not a being. And the form and mind is different. That one is karmically conditioned within the existential law. It has its causes and conditions to arise. That's why it's called a phenomenon, dependent originating condition arising. That aspect is very difficult to penetrate. That's why very few people are able to really realize the truth, the Dhamma, and awaken. So like what you mentioned is very beautiful because this thing strike you and it impact upon you because you find it so beautiful compared to last time. It's so different now. Now you see it with understanding. Like what I have laid out, the aspiration to go this way is so important. That's why we use the word, this nature of mind vow. We never say I vow. This nature of mind, that nature is not a being. That nature makes that vow. That nature includes every birth, every coming, every segmented life existence. That's why that whole of our nature means our karmic nature, our spiritual nature, and our entire existence means not only about this life, it's life after life, from now onward until all the way until we manage to fulfill our vow and realize our nature, realize Sama Sambuddhahood. So this understanding is very important for it to stay with us so that life after life, whenever we arise, means through whether the Bodhisattva way or karmic conditioning before the Bodhisattva way is established. This understanding can only arise if we have made the aspiration and the vow to plant the seed of Bodhi, the Bodhi mind, the enlightenment thought, to go this way. And we must take the vow, otherwise that pure mind cannot arise. The Bodhisattva way cultivation cannot take off. So all this understanding is very important, are very important, and we have to have that. Then from there, we have to make additional aspiration for having all this important right Dhamma understanding whenever we arise. Well, without this right Dhamma understanding, whenever we arise, we can be deluded. We can fall back into delusions, especially Sakkayaditi. The two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind, very difficult to understand. Then the universal characteristic, Rupang Anicang, Rupang Anatta, Vedana Anicang, Vedana, all these are not easy. Then finally, of course, we also need to have the support of our additional vow and miscellaneous vow, where we vow to invoke power merits to break our coming obstruction. Otherwise, this coming obstruction can be very strong, very powerful. So the whole of the cultivation is very comprehensive when you take the Bodhisattva way or Bodhisattva path to cultivate. So this understanding of all those right views, law of karma, law of mind, and law of truth, they are very, very important. And the three universal characteristics, the two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind, then we make the extra vow or miscellaneous vow to break karmic obstruction, to develop affinity with all the great beings and seek their blessing, protection, and guidance. Then we vow to invoke power of merits. Then we vow to take the three sets of pure precepts. All these are very important. Then when it comes to taking of the Bodhisattva vow and the pure precept, and also what we call the planting of the seed of Bodhi, that one, if it can actually like activated your nature, means like have an impact on you, like just now what you mentioned, it is a good sign, means you can develop it. And with the faith and the understanding, slowly all this will stabilize and you will be able to understand them and assimilate into your nature, so that whenever you have to come or choose to come in the future, this Bodhi mind that you have planted, they will nurture, then they will create the causes and conditions for you to have this understanding. Then whenever there is condition, triple gem or Dhamma, the understanding will surface and you will naturally understand and move that way. That's why this understanding to cultivate, make by going through all this, what we call taking the vow and also making aspiration by invoking power of merits, can be very powerful and very useful. So hopefully, with all this, it can help Kayanamitas too. So with this, I think I will let you continue, Susan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Having come into this and being in contact, also mean that we would have done some kind of vow in our past to be able to come across this now.
Yes, so could be, but not.
It's a matter
not
of
everyone. Not everyone. I will explain afterwards. Most of you all could have some form of past vow or affinity, but not everyone. I will explain to you later. You continue, yeah.
Okay. No, it's just that I was thinking that, it's just deep inside that, that feels that there must have already been a start.
Yes.
For
your case, very lightly, yes. Because otherwise you won't have that feeling or that impact. In Mandarin, they call Gan Ying. Gan Ying. Gam Yan.
Right.
Means you must have something in the past that enable you to have that Gan Ying.
Okay. And also, how does one establish further and establish this Dao so that it starts very early in life?
Yeah,
when you do come back,
I will explain this. Yes. Maybe I will explain this first. Otherwise, I forget. Okay, I will explain that too. Okay. First one is just now, you mentioned earlier on that very likely every one of you all, for you to have the condition to be born in the sasana, to come as living being and to be in contact with the Dhamma and have the condition to receive this bodhisattva way, very likely you all could have the vow before. That could be true for quite a number of you, or most of you, but not always the case, because this bodhisattva vow and this asana, you have to understand, to be born a human being is very rare. To be born during a sasana is also very rare. And during this sasana, born as a human being, and during the sasana, able to meet up with the true teaching, and the condition to receive all this vow is even more rare. That's why what you say, there is a lot of truth for some of you, or most of you, but not always all. The reason why I say this is because there are others that could have come to my class or to my sharing because of my vow. I got one vow. Whomever who appears as food for me to consume whenever I arise as a human being or living being, means that segmented line. My nature vow to take them all across. So some of you could come through this way as food or whatever in the past, then that is very general. But some of you could have been much more than that because we have affinity before. So for those who have the affinity before, you definitely might have developed some form of condition to learn from me, but not necessarily all. Because like my parents, they actually don't know who I am. Yeah. But they have this goodness in them, actually. And when they encounter me in the past life, my nature, they don't know who I am. But because of their kindness, their inner, what they call good nature, they are kind, they are honest, sincere, helpful. Especially my parents, they are simple people, then they must have helped me on certain occasion. Then my nature can feel, can sense that it rejoices, that it sends a pure wish out. Then that pure wish is very powerful. That's why the best way to benefit them is, if there are causes and conditions, is to make them my parent in one of the life. Then once they take care of me and raise me up, is the part of me itself is very, very powerful and very strong. Then I will invoke power of merit on their behalf for whatever they have done for me. Whatever love, care, sacrifice, and the whatever parental love, the care and the sacrifice that they have developed for my nature. Because to give me life, to provide for my upbringing, my education, my whatever needs when I was still young and as I grew up until maybe like this life, my parents were with me until quite an elderly age. My dad passed away in the year 2004, I remember, 2004, 80 years old. So that time I was, I think, 50 years old, 50 years old. So they actually went through the whole phase of my growing age, means from young, how I grew up, they care for me, provide for me, do a lot of things for me, sacrifice and all those things, then do their duty very well. Then when I come into contact with the Dhamma again, that's why this time I can do it fast, is because I know how to do it. That's why that is your second question. at the age of 17, actually 1971, I started searching for truth. That nature inside move, inquire. There was nothing to actually condition me. I don't go through any problem. I don't have any something, nothing. I was just a kid, 4415. Then suddenly inside, after I learned about science, geography, my understanding of technical subject, that thing starts to move inside. Because when I know about the universe and the mass, immense nature of universe, that thing start to move. Then I start to probe, and I like to look at the sky. I like to look at the heavens. Then there is always this question. The universe is so immense. I am just one of the minute living being or human being on this planet Earth. And our planet Earth is so insignificant. One of the third planet from this solar system. And our sun is just one of the infinite number of star system that exists. Any star out there could be larger or smaller than our sun. Then, like the Buddha said, the number of stars in our world system or universe is more than the sand on the Ganges. So all these questions start to surface. Then I was probing for almost 1 year until I suddenly, one day, one of my classmates' sister gave me one book. What Buddhists Believe, the first edition, the red copy by Chief Reverend K. Sri Dhammananda. The moment I read about the Four Noble Truths and the book explained that what my mother did was Chinese tradition, nothing to do with Buddhist teaching, then inside my nature, very funny, like I understood the Four Noble Truths so deeply that I knew no need to search it, that's it. Nobody 2,000 over years ago can have this understanding and summarize all his understanding into just Four Noble Truths. Then my right view, everything, like I have that one, the one that I teach you all to manifest. It's like I have them already, and I know what these things are. That's why it's very strange. Then the way I receive truth and understanding and meditate, nobody taught me really. Even my teacher, my guide, they give me some maybe advice and some pointer here and there. But the power of the teaching, the understanding and the way to do it, my nature evolved out through its past vow and understanding. Then a lot of things just happen. That's why people find it very difficult to understand. So that part is the first question about why not everybody has the vow, taken the vow before. It's because, like I said, you could be like the food I eat. My parents' case, they don't know who I am. So they are not on the path. But after this life, their future is all granted because of the parami as my parent. What they did and my pure wish to them. Everything is resolved and settled and gaudy already. Then the other one is, like I said, you all may have different type of affinity with my nature, not only as food for me to eat. Some may have followed me, cultivated with me before. That's why you all may have made them out. But not everybody has this condition. Because some of you may come to affinity with Guan Yin or other great beings. So you come, it's up to you to develop the understanding and the faith. That's why a lot of these people, they don't feel much, they don't feel anything, Guan Yin, but they like to be Kayamita. That's the only thing, because they know there's a lot of wholesomeness involved. They can learn a lot of things. But not everyone push all the way or become very serious. and develop the cultivation, like you and many other Kayamitas. So some are like, they heard about it, they join our retreat, like the earlier few pages. Some they come from very far, then after that, they don't know, continue on their own or disappear or just like a one-off event, affinity, I would say. So all this can be possible. But those who have the affinity and the special condition, they can feel. That is what we call kanying, like your experience. Like Po Cheng, they all, they will develop the training, the cultivation. Then they will progress very fast. Then a lot of things will happen. Yeah. Then like Brother Song, they all, Alicia and Amelia, many of them, they will actually come back. And then they will see the importance of all this, because this sasana, to plant the seed for Bohi and to take the vow, to renew it, to make it strong based on the causes and conditions available, it's not easy to find, to come about. So this life is one of the most beautiful windows. So that part I have already explained. Then I will explain the second part, which I have explained halfway. Your question on how can you, or as cultivator in future, when you come, you can have this understanding early in your life. You don't have to wait till you 30, 40 years old. Some maybe around 40 plus or 50 when you start moving into the cultivation and the development of the Dhamma understanding. So all this require understanding. You must understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, how to create causes and conditions for all this to manifest. So the best way is to make that vow, the Bodhisattva vow, then to make that aspiration to plant the seed of Bohi, then life after life to have all this understanding. Then under miscellaneous vow and additional vow, not only you vow to break all coming obstruction so that your cultivation path is very small. You also vow to cultivate the blessings and merits and perfect them all, until you have very strong reserve of wholesomeness and merits and blessing. Then you invoke power of merits for you to have the causes and condition to develop this understanding early. Because I have one of these additional vows also, which is very important, very powerful. Maybe I will share this with you all, then you all can understand. But this nature of mine always, of course, it will invoke power of merit, from its distant past until now, whatever wholesomeness. It vows to have the causes and condition to develop the highest wisdom or understanding that this nature of mind can develop whenever it arises under whatever condition or civilization, whether the sasana or no sasana, the highest wisdom, soonest possible. That's why I realized with all this understanding and vow, my nature will move into the spiritual path very early. Actually, this life, if it's not because of my wife and children's affinity, I'm not supposed to get married. But somehow the causes and conditions unfold, and I knew. That's why I said the condition was there, and I just echoed and flow, and it just happened. But when I look back, I knew at the age of 16 plus, before you were 17 years old, my nature already activated and moved. And when I was young, even 7 years old, 8 years old, I knew I was different. My nature inside can sense. Because the way I was brought into the world, I was born, I was so different. My grandmother used to tell me, even my mother also, he said, when I was born, I hardly speak. Even until the age of 5 plus. But my father and my mother told me I was very cute. And my mother liked me a lot because she said, I got no problem giving birth to you. Because she said, I never disturb her. Then after I was born, among all the 9 or 10 children she has, I am the easiest to look after. Because I don't cause her trouble. When I want to answer nature's call or hungry or what, I would just, I didn't even cry. She would tell me. Then when she put me on the Yao Lama, my mother said, I will know how to kick my leg so that the Yao Lam bounce by itself. No need to wait for somebody to come in and move me. Then when I she will know. Then she will come and maybe allow me to clear my urine or whatever. And my grandmother said, I never thought he's scared I am alo in Hakka. It's like, I cannot speak, dumb. Is it dumb? But then later on, when she saw me go to school, and saw a lot of friends, then she knew I was not dumb. But my mother knew, my father knew. I was very cute. And they took some photo in the studio. When I looked at myself when I was 2 years old, I can see the very naive type of face. The mind got no thought on, blank one. Then I cannot remember anything before the age of 6, because I have no thought. I can only recall a few incidents, but I know during that time my mind very empty one, nothing inside there. Which means I was born with my nature, my true mind. But later on, before I went to school, 6 years old, they decided to come back to Agusta where my father actually has a shop lot. He decided to settle down in Agusta. And that is where I mix with the village there is quite a notorious village. Like Tai Kong, there are a lot of gangsters and all those things. Because the environment there was like that. That's how I went through that conditioning. Then I saw how my mind as a young kid, how it get conditioned and defiled and become like these people. Then how I went to school. The school also very strange. My father picked me, the only son, to go to English school and he sent me to the best school. The rest all Chinese school. Very strange. A lot of things is very strange. That's how I encounter Dhamma and all those things, my teacher, my guide, all very strange. So if you have all this understanding, you will know how to make all this special vow and aspiration. So I have given you a few just now. One of them is the right view. Then additional vow to break karmic obstruction, then to plant the seed of Bodhi, then aspire using power of merit, blessing, and whatever wholesomeness for you to have this understanding whenever you arise, soon as possible, as early as possible. Then you also need to maybe cultivate a lot of very stable understanding, mindfulness, and all those things. Yeah, I remember when I was young, my mind, I didn't know that was sati until later on. Because when I was sitting alone, contemplating life, or alone looking at the sky, looking at nature, I realized my mind can be completely without thought, and I can see the flow of nature, the sway of the plant, the tree, that all the movement in nature, I can see. Then the time I was so young, I didn't know what was that. Then I was thinking maybe something to do with my past. Until I learned how to develop the meditation, the daily mindfulness, then I came to know what that thing. Because when I was very young, when I saw all this in the midst of life and nature, I knew this is not common. The normal people don't spend time contemplating this and reflecting this. Everybody is like normal kid, play around, having fun and all those things. But my nature is different. When I was young, I like to sit alone. That's why people call me monk, even at the university. Well, I like to sit alone and quiet my mind. Or sometimes I just blow musical instrument. I like harmonica and flute. That's what I did. And people who are observant, they know, they say, because when I was in my third year and final year, staying outside with a group of housemates, they were from Johor. The house, I think, we got 10 of us, 6 of us, boy, 4 girls. And they used to have the interaction, joke, and all that. Then when it comes to talking about me, they all say, forget about you. This one is a monk, is a Hersiel, live in my home. So a lot of very strange things do happen. So this is what my nature realized and saw. And I know how to do it because I know every life I come, all these are set. All the understanding is there because of my past wisdom and cultivation. Yeah, my foremost perfection is Adhidhana, Adhidhan, making a vow, aspiration, and all. That's why I know how to invoke power of merit to overcome coming obstruction, ask for forgiveness, then do the 3 things. Means after you ask for forgiveness or do the repentance, you vow not to repeat all this wrong thing by following the advice of the Buddha. Means you enter the cultivation. Avoid all evil to good and purify your mind. Then after that, you would have developed merits. Then I know how to teach people how to invoke power of merits for them to break their karmic obstruction. Then for them to overcome whatever they want to overcome and bring forth the causes and conditions to move on to solve their whatever worldly problem or life problem and situation, all this. That's why all this understanding comes from that special perfection of Adhidhana. And I realize I am very good at it. I know how to use this particular perfection, which nobody taught me this life. And all this understanding, nobody taught me. But I know how to use. And it really unfolds, and a lot of people benefited. So hopefully with this, Susan, yeah, you can develop the understanding. Okay? So, you want to continue with anything else? Because almost
there are others around as well. This, is it okay that I continue?
You can, no problem. Yes,
I think I noticed that this period of time, there is a switch, call it a switch, a change in the outlook of things. Yeah, to a point whereby in early years, it was more or less being very involved in others' difficulties, in others' sorrows or whatever goes through. But at this time,
it has become different, huh?
It is very, very different. Sometimes, Brother Teo, it's like to a point of, I use the word don't care, but to say don't care is really not don't care.
Yeah, not the correct word. We are deep inside, that thing is still there.
That's right. And I also noticed that somehow, when the need arises, automatically I will move and do the needful.
Sadhu. Yes.
So in that respect, the mind, I see a change.
Definitely, yeah. It's from your past, but you didn't realize it. Through my acquaintance with you, I saw a lot of things. After I will explain.
Yes, please. That's why these are the things that are happening.
Yes.
And you know, there's that clinging thing, not that, Brother Teo.
Yeah. You will experience all this. You will go through all this. No problem. Maybe I will explain it to you so that you can understand better. You remember during the early years when I first came to know you, especially Klang, after I went down there to give talk, then I get to know Brother Gan, your brother, they all. Then you also came to our classes and other things. I was down only. At that time, you were like what you say, you like to help others, other people's problem and other things is like important to you. Then you also very busy. You travel everywhere. You like to do merits, awesomeness. Then you like to go to all the way places, especially I think Thailand and other temples and all those things. Then at one stage, I realized you have good nature, but you were very kind, but you have not developed the cultivation enough. So you were busy running around until you are so tired. You not enough rest. But luckily, a good karma event happened, you know. The event happened. I visited you at the hospital. Then I advise you to rest and all those things. Yes, you were all over, one hour long everywhere. All the whatever. That, because that time you were having faith and joy and all things. But you didn't have enough time for your own cultivation, development and understanding. So that time you will have that type of mind. But after that incident happened, then you decide to have enough rest, you slow down, then all this starts to happen. You start to develop understanding and appreciation of the cultivation. That's why I realized later on when you attend my class, when you give the sharing, your understanding become different. You can see the important pointer that I share, and it has like impacted upon you. That's why I saw you coming back and develop all this. Then you were very sharp below of your past. You were able to catch a lot of all these things. Then like today, to be impacted by this Bodhisattva vows and aspiration of planting the seed of Bodhi, and my daughter Sui finally nominated you. It's all like meant to be, because at first supposed to nominate Kotlin, but Kotlin normally Sunday is not around. So you came in and your question turned out to be very good. And this is what you need to understand. You wanted all those things. You wanted to, like, in the future when you come, you have this understanding early. You don't want to waste your time, like, running around, just doing merits and maybe superficial Dhamma and cultivation. Of course, that phase is useful, important. It gives you joy. It gives you understanding. But what you can see is you come into contact with the Dhamma a bit late. Then the deep understanding part also a bit late. Then a lot of these things that you want to, like, understand, there is very little cultivator who can explain to you and describe all this to you. So the condition fall into place. That's why you have the condition. You ask, then my nature can understand all this. That's why it explain. So you have a very good mix of your past, but the emphasis is, of course, based on your understanding now, you also know to come into contact with the Buddha Dhamma early and to have all this right view so that you can cultivate early. And when you cultivate this time, go into awareness-based meditation. Don't go into thought-based, where that one wastes a lot of time. That's why I realize a lot of Kayamita, they actually spend a lot of time doing all those conventional thought-based cultivation or meditation. But the good thing that you all did is you all have the sincerity, the faith, the joy to actually do all this Dhamma activity and duty with sincerity, faith and joy. That's why that part is still wholesome, very good. But you all didn't know how to make aspiration for the correct Dhamma understanding and cultivation. So this line, you have this window, this understanding, you should determine, aspire, wow. Because now a lot of Kayamita, they know, even like Suyami from the old, and many Kayamita, they know. This type of teaching is very rare, very, very rare, very difficult to come by. So this is the part that I want you to keep in mind and develop the contemplative understanding. Then decide for yourself how you want to improve your future coming, your future life cultivation. And also this life, we are still not that old, huh? 60 plus, still many
older.
Many years. We still have at least another 10 over years to come. Not so bad, not so bad. Eh? So, rejoice. Yeah, Susan. And you have the means. You have good family, and you have your hubby very supportive. Very good. You also have good brothers and sisters too. Sadhu to you, Susan. So, hopefully, with this, it can actually help you develop more faith, more understanding, and aspire strongly, so that in future when you come, you are a different Susan. You can help many people because of your goodness, your kindness. Then I remember you and Sito, Michael's wife, the two of you are very kind. You always buy us lunch and dinner when we are in Klang, and some of your Klang Kalamita too. Then you all used to offer to us what the meditation pants and shirt, all those things. That one, I think you took us there to do the measurement. It was Sito or you, I forgot already. Klang.
In Klang.
We do our meditation attire. It was you, Sito, I forgot already. Both of you, I remember. That you are very generous, very kind. Huh? Yeah.
I think it was it was near my school, actually.
Ah, near your school, yes. Near your house also. After that, we go to your house. We are nearby, not far. Then when I visited your house, I knew.
That's right, yeah.
That time you were asking us how to install the altar and all those things, I remember. Then I gave a Dhamma sharing in the house. Yeah, that was very good. That sharing was very good. It was a house.
Sadhu.
Sadhu.
Yep. And now at 62 already.
No, still young. Yeah, still young.
But yeah. Never know when karma will hit us, but maintain the purity of mind and you know, the wholesomeness. Very supportive.
Yes. Our contribution towards the sasana and the humanity as a whole is very important. Yes. Wherever you can develop wholesomeness to help sasana, help the world, help people, we should, because this is what human life is all about.
Yes.
Is to develop wholesomeness, goodness, kindness, generosity, and be a blessing to all. And the purpose of Dhamma is to help us understand all this, liberate our mind, and help others to liberate their mind so that they can understand life and have the good life. Then when they have all this, means we also have them. That's why our lives are very unique. That's why you look at your life, you're also very blessed. Very good life, sadhu.
Can't ask for more, brother Tim.
Yeah, can't ask for more. That is the correct word. Sadhu to you.
Sadhu.
I think we should end.
It's taken so long.
No problem. Today we don't have the other session. We will end this after that. So let us rejoice with all the good sharing today we had with Susan and me.